Shamishta, describing how the density of matter was actually a descent, an involution of the consciousness which almost got lost in the inertia of matter. Out of that gradually there is an emergence of manifestation of form and life and mind. So this is the divine power of evolution that cannot happen unless the power of involution of all consciousness has not happened before. So thus taken was God's plunge into the night. He plunged. It was His choice. So what we call night, what we call absence of light, is actually the home of the light, the life, the night, the truth, the consciousness that is progressively emerging. It is not the opposite of day or light. This fallen world became a nurse of souls. It is a place where the consciousness individualized itself. The soul is a divine, you might say, inhabitant in the form. If that inhabitant is not there in the form does not grow. It is not guided from within. That guide enters into the darkness. That guide works its way and pushes the outer form to manifest beauty, to manifest love, to manifest truth. And that is, this fallen world became a nurse of souls inhabited by concealed divinity. Nurse in the sense nurturing, helping to grow. A being woke. The consciousness began to emerge and lived in the meaningless void. Before this being, there was nothing. There was void. Apparently void. No form, no expression. But out of that, if all things come one by one, they come out. They're all hiding and waiting for their right time. A worldwide nescience strove towards life and thought. A consciousness plucked out from mindless sleep. The mindless sleep is total inertia, total inconsciousness. Total inconscience is the sleep of consciousness. Sleep is not absence of existence. Sleep is something that is a period of, you might say, where you get back your energy, you start again. All here is driven by an insentient will for a long time. This will is there, this conscious force is there, but in the beginning it does not seem to have an embodied divine aspect. That is why in the Indian terminology, this is the lower prakriti. That is to say, the automatic or apparently automatic expression of energy. This energy that manifests itself in form and shape and life and gradually thought. It expresses itself without seeming to have a motive. It is not a being. It does its work like a machine, flawless, but it doesn't have apparently a purpose. As consciousness grows, this energy becomes conscious force and it begins to have a purpose. You have energy. As you become more conscious, you use this energy for manifesting something. Until then, the energy expresses itself because that is its function. Its function is to manifest itself. That is the role. So, a consciousness plucked out from mindless sleep. All here is driven by an insentient will. Thus, fallen, inconscient, frustrate, dense, inert. It is still in that state, raw, in that state. It has not fulfilled itself. But out of that density, out of that inertia. It's a period of what can be called a seed time, as if the seed is preparing itself to push its way up into manifestation. But why? Why does it do it? Is it that this world of form pre-exists, this plunge of the light into the night, so that every seed or every aspect knows the exact manifestation it is supposed to have? Every flower knows from before what shape it will have to be if it belongs to a particular family of flowers. There is no trial and error. There is no attempt. Every form knows, that means that knowledge, that consciousness, the truth of the divine presence is hidden, very well hidden, but it is there. It guides the form. It guides the manifestation. Every part of our being also. Like, we are not taught that we have to walk at a certain age after crawling for some time. It's the knowledge of having to stand up, the knowledge of having to play a different role in the world by walking through life. This comes automatically in the body. The body is not taught. So this is already there. There is a consciousness hidden, which is apparently an automatic consciousness. Or is it an eternal divine consciousness, which is not instilled, which is not slowly, it is not part of our education. Education, yes, in a sense, it has to be brought out. Education is actually to bring out what is already hidden. So all truth, all knowledge, all powers are already hidden. And they come out progressively in the right time, in the right manner. And ultimately, this will lead to perfection of manifestation. You reach the highest level, free of all lower pulls, all drags, all things that drag us down. It becomes a manifestation of perfect beauty. Beauty is a principle of the divine in the world of matter. So you realize matter is not dense. Matter knows exactly what shape, what color, what expression, what delight of existence is hidden in each form. And that is one of the reasons why Mother gave so much importance to beauty. Beauty of thought, beauty of action, beauty of movement, beauty of speech, beauty in all forms. Clumsiness, things done shabbily, is not something we should allow ourselves to fall into. We have the ability to come out of our dullness and effort, give a little conscious effort, so that whatever we say or do or speak becomes an expression, as far as possible at this given moment, the best that we can do. The next moment it could be better. So this is the insentient will. Thus, fallen, inconscient, frustrate, dense, inert, sunk into inanimate and torpid drowse. This is the sleep of dullness. What is sunk? Matter. It is the house of the spirit. It is the nurse of the spirit. Earth lay. The subject of the sentence is earth. Earth lay sunk in that state, especially as if she's preparing herself for the next stage in the future. A drudge of sleep. Drudge is like a slave, a servant. For a long time we are slaves of sleep, slaves of heaviness, slaves of error as well. Forced to create by a subconscious yearning memory. It's a beautiful line. As if she knows from before, this is exactly what she has to do. It is not surprising that, for instance, if you take some of the legends that we have in the country, You have the Supreme Lord sitting on the top of the mountain, Shiva. He's described by Sri Aurobindo as the inconscient creator. He sits there because it's out of him that power of evolution has come down. That is why he has the snake coiled around him. Snake is evolution. And what is yearning for reaching Shiva? The daughter of the mountain. Mountain is the aspiration of the earth. Stone, Parvati, she wants to go up and reach Shiva. It is earth wanting to reach that which is on the highest level of manifestation. It's always this aspiration that is hidden somewhere. And she comes from below. There are other stories like Sati. She is the daughter of the underworld, the world of the subconscious. There, her, she worships only Shiva, that one God, nothing but the Supreme. So there is as if in the heart of darkness, there is a continuous yearning for light.
Even Sita.
Sita is born out of the soil. She was hiding in the soil. So these are all very symbolic. That it is from below. It is not that you have to reach a certain height of development before you can come in touch with some other planes. Yes, consciously your mind comes in and starts giving explanations and maybe takes you on the wrong path. But it is in the very nature of matter that the aspiration for the heights is hidden. Matter wants it, has always wanted it. Matter is spirit. Matter is force. I think today it is Einstein's birthday.
Me?
Yeah. And his formula is that energy is matter. Matter and energy are different aspects of the same. So this was why he was also a mystic somewhere. He wasn't just a thinker or a discoverer. He has to be a mystic. He has to plunge deep into the very core of things to be able to catch that secret. Always matter is spirit. It is only the ascetic who lives by rejecting his lower nature who thinks that matter is the antagonist of the spirit. That you have to give up your physical activities and just concentrate on and contemplate on the soul. That will always be a partial realization. So this is the subconscious yearning memory. Somewhere there is this call, this wanting to go up. Left from a happiness dead before she was born. She is earth. The happiness of the divine Ananda, that is to say, the power of creative joy. The Supreme projected out of himself that creative Ananda, that joy. And that has plunged deep into the core of things, into the very core of the inconscient, in the subconscious. And that is why out of the soil, out of the mud, the flower goes up. The aspiration goes up. The fire goes up. Fire purifies. Fire burns. It takes away, you might say, whatever is contrary to the light. But it is always a power of aspiration. So invocation to Agni. These things are symbolic of the depth of light and aspiration called for the heights which is there deep below. If it were not there, we could never aspire. It has to go up from below upwards. An alien wonder on her senseless breast. Otherwise, this wonder of perfection would always be an alien, foreign to her nature. It seems so on the surface, because at present on the surface there is dullness and inertia and imperfection. But someday, this is the world where all that is perfect in expression will manifest itself. This Maya must harbor the orchid and the rose. Maya is mud. Out of the dirt, out of the lowest level of the dirt, that perfection will have to manifest itself. So get the image of also the lotus, perhaps. The lotus blooms in the mire. It blooms in the dirt, dirty waters, and never gets dirty. It blossoms. It perfumes all its surroundings. It's an expression of consciousness. So you have this image of the mire must harbor the orchid and the rose. From her blind, unwilling substance, that is the intermediary period, the substance is unwilling. She has slept for so long, she doesn't want to move. From her blind, unwilling substance must emerge a beauty that belongs to happier spheres. So that heights and the depths are bridged, as he says in the God's Labour. The force of the height comes down and manifests itself like a bridge between the heights and the depths. This is the destiny bequeathed to her. This is her inheritance, her bequest, what is given to her by her forgotten parent. Earth has forgotten who her parent was. The parent is the Creator, the Supreme, the Lord. She has forgotten. We have forgotten where our origins lies. We associate, we identify ourselves with this surface existence, which is mortal. But why then is there a yearning for immortality in a body that is mortal? Why is there an yearning for freedom in beings like us who are slaves, bound to our weaknesses and our incapacities? We want to be free, we want to be immortal, because we already are somewhere that. It is already there, but it stays pushed into the background. This is what we have inherited. We are sons of the sky by the body of the earth, as the Vedas say. Earth is our mother, the sky is our father. That is actually where we start. But the two are, make one whole. The universe is not just a divided universe. As in the Supermind, he always speaks of something that is spherical. It's not something that is really graded one level after another. It is around. What is on the heights is on the depths, in the depths. As if a slain god had left a golden trust to a blind force and an imprisoned soul. This is the role that is given to us, children of the earth. The God, the divine conscious being, seems to have stepped back. And what is the task of man? To evolve. That is the role allotted to him. Only man evolves. Man grows. Man can participate in his own progress. He can become tomorrow more than he is today. Consciously, if he does this, he evolves. Unconsciously, he does it anyway, it takes thousands of years. The change has to be. That is the destiny of earth. As if a slain god left a golden trust to a blind force and an imprisoned soul, the soul remains imprisoned. If the soul takes over and manifests itself through every part of every cell of the body, that is exactly the Yoga Mother was really attempting at the end. Every cell of the body has accepted to be, to have an element of unconsciousness. Every cell of the body contains the divine flame. So to push out that inconscience, to bring forth the divine flame, that is the role allotted to man. It is very long, very hard, but only man has been given this huge, you might say, task because he is considered perhaps somewhere worthy. Even if one man does it, it becomes a sign that it is possible. That is the one man that counts. The rest are just unnecessary. There is so much of unnecessary humanity because they don't take any trouble to change. As that very beautiful talk by the mother, if only humanity consented to be spiritualized. Our consent is required. We will not be pushed. Nature does not push you. Our consent has to take place. Then the journey becomes a march. It becomes a joy. It becomes a forward, in spite of difficulties. Otherwise, at every step, we stumble. We hurt ourselves. We hurt the world around us. We fall because we are moving blindly. This is a blind God. An immortal Godhead's perishable parts, she must reconstitute from fragments lost, reword from a document complete elsewhere, her doubtful title to her divine name. Earth is divine. Today it's a doubtful title. Title is she's not entitled to. She has forgotten. We say earth is below. Heaven is above. Heaven is here, down below also. There is no opposition between what is above and what is below. If we can find that circle of unity that is there everywhere. This is the play of opposites. We wear the perishable aspect of the immortal. But deep inside we are immortal. So we must reconstitute that title, entitlement, that is a document, it's almost legitimate. To be human is to be divine. But we have to reconstitute the document, we have to rewrite it again. Otherwise, at present, it is doubtful, as it is today, that man is divine. You know, you have to stop being man as you are in order to become another being. And if we don't, man will be eliminated probably. That also, that possibility is there. If man does not collaborate and mother has messages in the New Year calendar several times, will you help? Will you collaborate? If you do not, you will be replaced. Another race will replace man. Because that is the role. And he puts it as perfect. It's a bequest. It's an inheritance. As if it is something legal. A residue, a soul inheritance. All things she carries in her shapeless dust. This is earth. Shapeless, unconscious, absolutely without any aspiration. All possibilities of perfection are hidden below. It is from below that the flame of aspiration and perfection rise. What is left? It is still there. This is the inheritance. He says, a residue of her soul inheritance. We have forgotten, no? You have forgotten that you are the child of the Supreme. You say you are the child of your parents. But who are your parents? Where is the beginning? Your parents are also children of the same parents. Go back and back and back and back and you go to the first parent. That original creator. Who has projected himself on earth. So earth manifests. The mother manifests. It is as if the Lord has given his inspiration and the mother gives the embodiment. So this is the combination of earth and sky, a man and God. They don't belong to different categories. We do. We think that we belong to opposite camps. We don't. If we can recognize that this opposition is simply laziness on our part. That we don't want to go far enough, deep enough, dig deep enough, and just even inquire in ourselves, where does everything begin? What is that first state? That tat, that supreme tat, from which all things have slowly emerged. Because our vision, mental vision, physical vision, is extremely myopic. You see just what is in front of you. You don't go far enough. Her giant energy tied to petty forms. We have on the vital level, unconsciously, life has come out of the world of matter and manifests that energy. But if that energy is not guided by consciousness, it is, as often is now the case, destructive, violent, and that is why you say, should leave this earth. If this is the world man has created, it's not worth living in. But it is not for this that the world has been created. The world has been created to manifest the divine. Her giant energy tied to petty forms in the slow, tentative motion of her power. This is what tentative, because it moves very slowly. Try and we fail, and it is as if that creative energy that was projected out of the Lord, he projected these four energies out of himself, as I've told you before, and they had the sense of their huge responsibility. There was life, there was truth, there was consciousness, joy, and there was joy, truth, consciousness, and life. And they were projected, and it is as if the Supreme Mother said, now you are the ones who will have to interplay and create a world. They had the sense of their enormous responsibility. That became the ego. That became the asura. They lost their dependence on the Supreme Mother. They said, we are responsible for our own actions. And that is why sometimes in man also, the great man, he is, perhaps sometimes in the beginning he feels something else is working through him. Somebody else is working through him. If he is simple, if he is absolutely quiet, he can feel that another force is maybe working through him. But after a while, when success comes, when achievement comes, he thinks he is the author of his success. And that is when the four asuras, the four titans who rule the world have came on earth. So the Lord was watching from behind. He was smiling. The mother turned to him and said, Sunepa Fama, it didn't work. What should I do? He said, start again. But this time, create beings, giving them less energy. You hold them in check. So the second batch of beings were the gods. The gods don't get distorted, but they are not always effective. Man is much more easily affected by the titans than by the gods. Because they are gentle, they are kind, they are meek, but the titans sweep you away. Passion and violence and ego, they take over. So this is the battle. If these forces have the energy, but if they can surrender their ego, then you have the beginning of a new race. That surrender has to finally take place. So the greater your capacity today for anything, the greater your realization that it is not yours. It has come from somewhere else. And you offer it at the altar of the divine. Instead, you say, this is mine. My genius is mine. My creation is mine. Who is this I? It is that which causes all our suffering. Her giant energy died to petty forms in the slow, tentative motion of her powers, because evolution is very slow. It goes up and comes down. It is a vertical spiral. What goes up comes down. The higher it goes, the lower it falls. So that's the whole problem. Anything in me, if I have a great achievement, if I have made a great achievement, will be succeeded by, followed by somewhere, some kind of a blow that will inevitably follow. With only frail, blunt instruments for use. She has accepted as her nature's need. This is earth nature, she. She has accepted as her nature's need and given to man as his stupendous work, a labor to the gods impossible. This is the function of man, because only man evolves. Man can make a choice. I am this now, I can be something else tomorrow, but I have to keep on working on it. A god doesn't change. A god remains forever. The god of light is always light. The god of love is always love. He doesn't become the god of knowledge. In fact, as Mother says in one of her talks, they almost envy men. Men can really have all the possible experiences. Each god has his own experience. So sometimes they choose to give up their divinity and come on earth as human beings, because they want to know what all the other possibilities are waiting for. Man is full of these things. It's a privilege to be born a human being, as well as a huge difficulty, but also a privilege. Everything is open before us. It all depends on, as Mother's very simple prayer we were taught in kindergarten, all depends on what you put behind you. The mountain path goes up. All depends on what you put behind you. If you go up, you go to the sky, to the sun. If you turn your back to the sun, you look down on the mud. What do you put behind you? It's just that. Your choice. At every step you have a choice. Are you going to move up or are you going to slide down? Every slope has the possibility of making a slide. That's why the mountain path. That's why it's difficult, perhaps, to rise. Often we build temples on mountaintops. The possibility of fall and death is also there. So there is always this interplay of that which destroys and that which raises us up. It is up to us, what we put behind us. And another reason why she keeps on repeating, don't look back. Don't keep on clinging to the past. Whatever has been, has been. You turn back to the past, you are putting the past in front of you. You're turning your back to the future. And given to man as his stupendous work, a labor to the gods impossible. A life living hardly in a field of death, this is man. What a short while the role of the time allotted to man is very small. All around is lifelessness, is death. A life living hardly in a field of death. Its portion claims of immortality, and yet man has this, he dares to ask for immortality. God, light, freedom, immortality, these are the claims he makes in the first sentence of the Life Divine. This is the sentence, the earliest preoccupation of man, which promises to be his last. God, light, freedom, immortality. He has not got any of them as yet. But why does he claim them? Because there must be something in him that is related to these things. He is related to God. He is related to immortality. He is part of that whole. He is not cut off from the origin. We think we are cut off from the divine. We are part of that whole. We are children of immortality. That is the phrase you have in the Upanishads. We are Amritasya Putraha, children of immortality. A brute, half-conscious body serves as means, a mind that must recover a knowledge lost, held in stone grip of by the world's inconscience, and wearing still these countless knots of law, a spirit bound stand up as nature's king. But this is almost a paradox. Man slave, man free. Man master. One of the last essays Sri Aurobindo wrote is man slave or free. Is he slave? Or is he free? Or is he both? Potentially, he is free. Existentially, he is not. He is a slave of himself, of weakness, of death, of failure, of all that drags him down. He is bound by his own nature. He has to cut these bondage and stand up as nature's king. That means he doesn't give up anything. He masters the world. He takes into the, as he says, take up the whole creation in his hands, remold creation, and recreate himself, stand up as nature's king. So then, perhaps that is the reason why in that poem, Meditations of Mandaviya Sri Aurobindo's beautiful poem, he says, man once more must seem the image true of God. All traditions say man is made in the image of God. At present, man doesn't seem to be made in the image of God. But he has to one day become a manifestation, a projection of that consciousness. So he has to, as if take up the laws of manifestation, remold creation, law and process old. That's part of that poem. And stand up once more and be an image true of God. Okay.